these assessment tools have to be relevant. And I think this is very important, and I wanted to actually spend a small time on this, which is today when you go, for example, you go to Mangalore during the rainy season, many of them would have fever, and the doctor would come and essentially see the patient and say, "Arey yaar, isko to malaria hai, we immediately isko artemisinin diyo, nahi to anti-malarials, and let's go on." Now, the West would often think of that as unscientific or not evidence-based, etc. But to be very honest, I have met enough doctors where 9 out of 10 times they are correct. And the reason is, there is a bulk of experience that comes from knowing the environment and the clinical factors, which they marry with the need for tests. So the relevance is very different here compared to the relevance in the West. So that is something that I wanted to hit upon also when I use the word relevant with respect to the assessment tools or diagnostics. Now, if you look at diagnostics, they are along the spectrum. There are some that are useful in what we call screening. So they help prevent illness or know whether or not you're progressing to illness. There are some kinds of diagnostic tests that are about diagnosing illness, asking whether or not you actually have fever. If so, what type of fever is it? Is it viral or bacterial fever? If it's bacterial fever, is it actually something that is going to be self-limiting, or do you need to get on broad spectrum antibiotics or otherwise? And the third is what we call treating illness, which is you already had an effect as a result of the attack by the organism, and therefore you're treating illness. So if you look at the kinds of diagnostic technologies, they go all the way from what we call screening technologies to management of wellness and illness. Now, if you look at it, a lot of technologies that are currently being developed in India as well as in the West have a lot of focus here, which is on finding out and diagnosing and treating. From a public health point of view, what's really interesting for me as a problem statement is, how do you actually think in terms of early detection? Now, if you keep in mind the big picture that we laid out earlier in the previous two slides, if you want to be able to screen, you have to screen using non-clinicians, because you're not going to have enough number of doctors or clinicians available to do the screening. So the tools have to be used by those who may not necessarily have an MBBS degree, or those who may not be completely skilled in the art of medicine or in the art of even delivery of diagnostics and information. That's where I feel very strongly that we need actually new tools for screening. You can't sort of use existing tools. Now, what do I mean by that? Let's take an example. How many of you have taken a screening test where they possibly do an ECG to see if everything is okay with you? Okay, some of you have. So what is very interesting is, ECG as a technology was meant for finding out whether you've had an attack, and if so, what are the changes. But when you bring that to screening, it's highly irrelevant, because it doesn't tell you whether you're going to have an attack immediately or not. It'll tell you whether or not there is a chance that you've already had one. So oftentimes, that's where I think it's very important for us to ask ourselves, are the current tools sufficient, or do we need to think in terms of new tools for screening? Now, the problem statement, the way I would like to define and pose it to you, is a lot of these tools for screening are imported into India, and what happens is, they are designed for a certain context. There are certain macroeconomic reasons why they are designed a certain way, and there are certain reasons why they are used a certain way in the West. Now, what happens is, you have them being imported into India, and this is true in most other geographies as well, developing nation geographies as well. And when they are actually used in the Indian context, they are usually force-fit solutions. Now, what do we mean by that? I'm going to get to that pretty quickly with a video and an example. But one thing that we all focus on is, we focus on the fact that they are very expensive. So everybody says, why is it that we don't have access? Because the tools are very expensive that come from the West. But one of the areas that is of significant interest to me is, by design, I strongly feel that it's not about the expense, but many of them lack what we call design relevance, meaning the design is not suited to local problem definition. I'm going to give you a small story on this, which is the very first time that I came back, before we start doing any product, we go and watch. We sit for hours on end and watch how current technologies are used by the people in the field. So in one such visit to a diagnostic lab in a small tier 2 city, like I think you can think of it as a place similar to, let's say, Kolhapur, what we realized was the fact that here there was a diagnostic lab technician who had an instrument, around 70% of that cost of that instrument was actually a touch panel that was there. And it was very interesting that we noticed that she would never use the touch panel. She would connect a mouse and actually implement all of the data entries in there. So we would ask her, why is it that she wouldn't use it? And her answer was very simple. She said, I don't get time to remove my bloodstained gloves, so I don't want to touch the surface. So what I really do is I'm okay with the mouse because the mouse can be disinfected easily. I can't disinfect a TFT screen. So to a certain extent, it's a lot of those inputs that are needed to ask the question, what is the kind of design that is relevant in the Indian context, and are the solutions that are currently being used as good as what is ideally needed? And that's really what we talk about in terms of what I call design relevance or problem definition. Now, one of the points that I wanted to focus on is a lot of the technology used in India is what I call very what is available focused. And we see this also when we go and meet with doctors to understand what are the kinds of solutions. Usually they are like this, Anand, ye jo hai na, iska ek low cost version bana do. It'll be perfect and it'll be very relevant for the Indian context. But what we try and talk to the doctors is to tell them, if we are from Mars and we didn't know how these devices were built, can we think of it that way? Why do we need to re-engineer? Is there a way by which we can redefine the problem and then ask the question, what is the right solution for this particular problem statement? And we'll go through a small case study on that as well. But that is sort of an approach that we oftentimes believe needs to be taken, rather than an approach of what is what we call very what is available kind of focused. Now, I'm just going to show you, this is the condition that I talked to you about called retinopathy of prematurity. And I'm going to show you a video of what is currently being used in the Indian context, albeit not in a large number of centers, simply because this is almost a 1 crore kind of a system, 75 lakhs to a crore kind of a system. And what is amazing is to find out whether a child, an infant has ROP, it costs roughly a 1 crore instrument. The treatment in, let's say, Arvind Eye Care or Narayan Nethralaya or AIIMS or anywhere else costs less than 2000 rupees. So what's amazing is you have a case where the treatment costs are low, but to find out whether or not that person needs that treatment, you need to invest in a very expensive instrument. So this, for example, I'm going to play it, and what I would want you to see is just focus on what you're doing here is they're going to use an instrument to take an image of the retina of the baby. This is a 28 to 30 week baby. And here's what they are trying to do. That's just for the science folks in you, that is to match the refractive index, a gel. And now you have a device, as you can see, he has a wire that goes around his neck and he places that on the eye of the child in order to take the images that you are actually seeing. Okay, now this is done in an NICU. It is being done by someone who is actually a trained nurse. He does not know how much he has to press that, etc. But it is working reasonably well in those places where they are training them. Now, if I were to ask you, most doctors would say, is there a way by which you can make something which is a low-cost version of this? Now, instead, I would pose the question back to you, do you think this is a solution that is scalable? Tomorrow, do you think a nurse in every NICU in India would be able to use a device of this sort? What would your answer be, is one question that I have. Do you think it is a solution that is scalable? Or if you think that we make a low-cost version of this, do you think that's all we need to create access? I mean, one way by which I can simplify your answer is, I muted the video for a very particular, very specific reason. I'm now going to start the video with the music, I mean with the sound, sorry, not the music. Now watch what I'm doing. Is it's not an easy to use system. Now tomorrow you can't have healthcare workers go into an ICUs or train nurses really be able to do this that easily. It is possible, you can train, but it's not an easy problem to solve. Now what's important is to think in terms of, if you look at a problem statement of the sort where one says we need to essentially look at the eyes of the baby in order to see whether or not they need to be treated for this condition called retinopathy of prematurity. What is it that we do today in India? Now obviously not many hospitals, there are only 3 or 4 hospitals that have access to such expensive equipment. So what happens in India is you actually have a trained ophthalmologist, a pediatric ophthalmologist, who goes and so this is what happens in India. But you have only around 25 to 30 pediatric ophthalmologists, and you have at least 25,000 hospitals that have at least basic NICU services where you have premature births, that you can't really scale this as a solution. You can't have a doctor go anywhere, everywhere. So you do need some kind of digital imaging technologies. What the doctor is doing here is he's viewing the retina through his binocular lenses, right? So that's really what he's doing here. So if you were to define the problem statement and ask the question, okay, fine, how are you going to solve the problem? Instead of just focusing on the cost, what we asked ourselves is, okay, the tools have to be used by non-specialists. So it has to be very simple to use. It's not something that can cause trauma either to the child or to the person who's actually doing the diagnostics. It has to operate in infrastructure limited settings. So which means you may or may not have continuous access to electricity. You need to have a rugged design, because tomorrow if you're going to scale, India is a land of plenty. If you need around 10,000 systems to go into the field, you cannot build a model where you have service delivery mechanisms by which somebody goes there and fixes problems in case something fails. Last, site of imaging is far removed from the site of image diagnosis. Now this is important. What we're really saying is we are envisioning a future where the nurse practitioner basically takes images, and the images are sent over cloud over a 2G network to a set of these 15 to 20 pediatric ophthalmologists who are able to immediately review the images and say, yes, bring the child in, it needs treatment, or no, wait up. Because this is a self-limiting condition. It's not something where every baby that's born premature and who may have early indications of ROP needs treatment. It's one where you need, it can be self-limiting. In case, let us say, it's not self-limiting, you need to bring them in for treatment. So, and eventually, of course, it has to be affordable and low cost. But it's not, the point I'm trying to make is it's not about low cost alone. You sort of need to redefine the problem and ask what are the key features that it needs to have in the Indian context that the current solution that has come in is does not have. And if you look at, let's say, what the current solution is, that's really what the current solution is. Whereas what we have worked on and we are in the last stages of validation before we launch is basically something that can be held by a hand, and you're able to take the same image on a mobile phone with the same kind of clinical efficacy as what you would get from those systems. So the point to make here is the redefinition in a way helps you choose the right kind of technology solutions. There's a lot of science and technology that goes into it, but my focus is a lot on the problem definition, saying that if you are making a low-cost version of that, you would not think in terms of coming up with something which is radically different. That's really what the intent of these two pictures there is to necessarily prove to you or show to you. Now, this leads to the sort of central hypothesis, and I believe in this very strongly, which is when you come to a constrained environment and you have a lot of constraints, oftentimes you do innovate. You do come up with something very new because you really cannot depend on a lot of features that may be very relevant in the West but not so in India. So what we try to do is we use the constraints as an opportunity to innovate, and this we feel actually leads to a paradigm that is actually also going to be globally very relevant, because oftentimes something which is simple to use, something which is affordable, will have a global market. But it's about making sure that you solve the right problem. So it's not about re-engineering, but it's about starting up with what we call ground up innovation. So here's one other case study where we defined the need locally and we identified the constraints. So we decided that we're not going to re-engineer, we're not going to make a low-cost version of something, but let's think in terms of a new solution to the problem. So the big picture problem is we were looking at a large number of vision impaired people in different parts of India, and obviously it's very well known this is the distribution in terms of preventable blindness. What we mean by preventable blindness is those acute and chronic conditions that are actually preventable, reversible. For example, cataract is reversible, but what happens in case of things like diabetic retinopathy, glaucoma, AMD is unless you pick it up early, you sort of, they are silent killers. They over a period of time result in loss of vision without many people not even knowing that. Now, this is the burden due to the acute as well as chronic conditions. And this is very important in India because as we produce more and more diabetic patients, we are producing more and more that are in need for early access to screening of the eye. Unfortunately, today if, let's say, my father has a diabetic condition, he goes to a general physician. He doesn't go to an ophthalmologist to get his eye seen. So really what you need is a solution that's very easy to use, that you can actually move into the physician's clinic, that you can move into an optical store, so that you can sort of bring in the concept of what we call eye wellness. So the reason is, for you to be up till a certain grade of diabetic retinopathy, you really need no treatment, you just need small lifestyle changes. So it's much better off for you to pick it up early rather than actually undergo a treatment much later on. Now, what happens in, and this is the situation in India, is you have most of the urban eye care institutions that have a lot of technology, but you have decreasing access to this as you move closer to the small eye clinics in remote areas as well as the public health centers. This is something that I'm sure we all relate to. And so what we really have is a lack of access to early screening. And so many people, when they actually come to the hospitals in the cities, they already have the condition. It's very difficult to sort of reverse it in many cases for the chronic conditions. So this increases the prevalence of what we call preventable blindness. I mean, just to give you some numbers, you have around 5 million people today in India who are at different stages of diabetic retinopathy and don't even know it. And that's what we are talking about in terms of numbers, and that's what we are talking about in terms of the opportunity to have an impact. Now, what we are really trying to do is to ask the question, can we diffuse those technologies by making them very simple and of course making them low cost? And is it possible for us to move those technologies closer to where the patient is? Now, I think what we are doing is, in a way, by doing this, you are trying to create access. But what we are also starting to do in urban areas is, we are also creating convenience for the consumer. For example, we have partnered with some service delivery vendors who are able to take our systems into the houses of many of the cataract patients or diabetes patients to screen them at home, so that the images can then be sent to the doctors for their review. So what we're really trying to do is to use telemedicine over the mobile network, so that it's possible for you to send the images to a doctor and then take a decision without the doctor having to be there. Now, what does this mean? I mean, let's take someone who is actually wearing a spectacle, maybe the person right back there. Do you go to ophthalmologist often, or do you go to a Titan Eye Plus, or what do? Do you go to an ophthalmologist? You do, okay. How long does it take you to go from your house to the ophthalmologist clinic? 1 hour. How long do you wait in the ophthalmologist clinic? That depends. 2 to 3 hours? Okay. How long? Sorry? Half a day. Great. And thereafter, you've got to come back, right? What if now we were to have a technology by which we can actually come to your house, look at your refraction, look at whether you have cataract or glaucoma or any issue with your eye with respect to the wellness of the eye, and send it to the same doctor that you visit, and he or she looking at the images and giving you an that's really what we're trying to do, to sort of realize that it's possible for you to do early screening if you are able to make it convenient. And this is important because we met a lot of patients who are diabetic, have early retinopathy. They've been asked by the doctors to come after 3 months, 4 months, but they don't go until their vision is affected, by which time it's too late. So what you're really trying to do is, can we make it convenient so that they don't have an expense later on? And in doing this, you do it in a sustainable way where it also makes business sense. So why can't current imported systems be used? I mean, this is a question that I'm sure all of you should have, which is, what is so, okay, you define the problem, but why can't we use the current technologies that are available globally? One, very bulky. There's no way you can take this. I'm sure if you go to an ophthalmologist clinic, you've sat on one of those. Very complicated. There's no way that you can train someone to actually take good quality images. It's extremely difficult to use. And it's very non-intuitive. It requires a lot of training before you start getting images that are very easy to use and can be used by the ophthalmologist to see whether or not there is a problem. So, what is very interesting is if you look at 1960s, right, I'm sure some of you at least would have seen those phones, and then to the cordless ones, and then to the smartphones that we have today. Now, what I decided to do was, exactly at the same time point, I went into the medical devices at those times, and here's what you see. That's the medical device in 1940s, that's the one in 1980s, and that's the one currently. If you look at it, fundamentally they've become very feature-rich, but from a design and simplicity of use, nothing much has changed. So what we ask the question is, okay, what if you take the physics from this, marry it to an interface like a smartphone that everyone is very comfortable with, and is it possible for us to get the same quality images, because you need the same kind of image quality as what you would get on a typical desktop huge systems. And that's really what we ended up doing. This was for diabetic retinopathy screening. And so what we had to do was, if you go to an ophthalmologist, I'm sure you would have seen that you first sit on one device where he looks at the front of your eye, then he'll ask you to go to another device where he looks at your retina. Thereafter, you may go to an OCT where he looks at the depth of the retina. Now, we don't go into the diagnostic imaging, but from a screening perspective, we sort of made a very portable smartphone-enabled device where the physics of it is you do what's called reflex-free imaging of the retina and the front of the eye without any reflex artifacts, and these images can then be sent of both the front of the eye and the back of the eye. Now, what was very interesting is in Bangalore, for example, around Durbalapur area, during the harvesting season, we started realizing that once we started taking images, we could see a database where during harvesting season, fungal keratitis was very high. So now we started seeing certain epidemiological variations where, depending on the season, we started seeing a certain incidence of certain diseases as well. So things that start happening once you're able to archive and take images and do that on a large scale, which is really the advantage of really doing something in India or innovating in India and coming up with something which is very decentralized. So what it is, yes, it's hit the affordability checklist. It's 1/5 to 1/10 actually of the price now. It is very compact and easy to use. And this is very an important part that I want to sort of spend a small minute on, which is when we first went to the market, the first question that they would ask is, have you validated this with high-end institutions that use the desktop cameras? And we would tell them, yes, we have, etc. But I think the validation that was most useful for us was actually with the public health workers in the villages, because they would tell us, is it actually simple to use? They would actually give feedback in terms of, "Arey yaar, ye itna mushkil hai yaar, aisa mat banao." And there were a lot of feedback that came in that we had assumed, that we really did not question when we were designing the instrument. So one point which is very useful is to look at getting customer feedback. In this case, the customer is not the paying person. The paying person is still maybe the hospital or maybe the screening unit. But the person using the device here is very different. So it's not an ophthalmologist's feedback, but what's equally important is the public health worker's feedback. And what we've been able to do, and this has been validated through peer-reviewed publications, is the quality of images are the same as what you get from the high-end systems or the large desktop systems. Now, it's great from a technology perspective, but you can really have public impact. Sorry, go ahead. That's right. That's right. See, so just to get into the science of it, initially we tried using the illumination of the device itself. There are challenges in doing that. In fact, the most interesting thing is how do you actually control an external flash and synchronize that to the shutter of a phone camera, right? Because that's one of the things, and that's one of the patterns that we've gotten on the device. That's right. That's right. No, there are two issues. One is, yes, they're not good enough from the point of view of, and this is the interesting thing, right? Which is, they are white flashes. They're not warm white. Their Kelvin temperatures are different. So when you need acceptance from a community that is very used to looking at a certain tone of the image, it's very difficult for you to sort of work with what is already there. Point number one. Point number two, there's a huge variability in the intensities. Now, if you want to make this as something that's generalizable, it's very difficult to sort of use that illumination. And the last is, it's not very clean. There are issues that are there in using that as well.
I was thinking that there are optical
correct.
That's a passive thing that you just attach.
Correct.
It's not so big.
Correct.
It uses the illumination and the
correct.
Of the camera.
Correct. No. What we found was the image quality was compromised. See, what you do here is when we shine light into your eye, you sort of have to do what's called an annular illumination technology, which is you actually image from the center and send the light in from the sides so that you separate the imaging and the illumination paths. The reason to do that is so that you get what's called reflex-free imaging. So any of the light that reflects off of the cornea does not affect the retinal image. So doing that is difficult if you use the same illumination of that, and many of those are compromised by that. That's point number one. Point number two, there is something called field of view, which is how much of the retina that you can see. Now that gets compromised when you actually do much of the optics with just the clip-ons. So what you have to do is, very early we decided that we would not compromise on the image quality, and therefore what we took from the smartphone was its ability to process. It's multi-element module inside, which allows a beautiful autofocus without you having to do anything at all. And lastly, you had to create the technology to synchronize. And of course, the apps are separate in terms of management of data, etc. But the optics was done separately in doing that. So one question we had was, why wouldn't they, anyone else would have thought about this, but what we realized is redesigning the entire optical train for the aperture of a phone camera is actually not easy, because you would need to change the entire optical design for you to be able to ensure that you fit the aperture of that. The nice thing about phones is the apertures are reasonably standardized. Point number one. Point number two, these are not extremely low light applications, so that you can make do with some light loss as well. So those are some reasons why we feel the smartphone worked. And because of the fact that they've improved over the years, you've been able to take advantage of using your own illumination and optics and marrying it to the imaging path there. So right now, an equivalent system costs anywhere between 12 to around 20 lakhs, a good quality system. We sell it at roughly around 1.7 to 2 lakhs. That's what we do right now. So the next was, okay, fine, you have a technology, but what use is the technology unless you try a small attempt at having some level of a public health impact? And this was something that was done in partnership with Vision India Foundation, an NGO based in Pune, led by an ophthalmologist by the name of Dr. Salil Gadkari. What we did was to mobilize a group called Tanishq, which is basically a large number of healthcare workers, but who also double up as women entrepreneurs, and we basically provided the system to them, and we would mobilize, they would actually go mobilize a lot of diabetic patients, and we would use the system, they would use the system to screen, we would send it over the WhatsApp network, so we used to have almost 1/10 compression, we used to send it across, and that compression was still fine, the image quality was sufficient for them to be able to read and immediately see if there's a problem or not. And then you would essentially have a treatment referral that would come in, and eventually it would get reported in media, and that would have a multiplicative effect in terms of more and more people actually getting screened. We screened a total of around 4,000 individuals, diabetics, and what was amazing was nearly 13% of them had retinopathy changes that they didn't know of. And that's really what we felt is the public health impact, which is, if you are able to find those with acute conditions, fine, they would anyway headed to an ophthalmologist. But if you are able to find someone with a chronic condition early, you are able to then reverse what would otherwise have led to a vision loss. So these 13% had really close to sight-threatening retinopathies that we could actually eliminate early. So this was, of course, with it did not require technology alone, but it sort of required the NGO partner, and it also required the clinician who put the protocols together for using this to get the images, and of course a media partner to really create the awareness around the screening. So really what I want to sort of close with, and would want to open it up on really having a lot of discussion around, is the learning that I've had is you oftentimes have to define the problem locally. And how do you define the problem locally oftentimes is about looking not at how it was designed in the West, but asking how do you need it to be designed if it has to do something in India. Secondly, it is not about affordability alone, but I feel very strongly about this, is you need to make something extremely simple. And you have to think of features that may not have been part of the design algorithms of what the West may have done. I mean, in the previous company that I was working with, we made these HIV CD4 reagents, where the idea was to be able to provide what's called immune monitoring enumeration. And what we made there was reagents that did not need refrigeration. So that was very critical for the Indian context. So again, an example where you can focus on affordability, that's important, but you have to also focus on what else are the features that are needed that are relevant locally in addition to affordability. And that's really what I wanted to sort of leave you with. Now, what we feel is it's not about technologies alone for us to really have an impact. Just as we had that delivery innovation where we had someone going with the device and going door to door, something like that is really needed. And the kind of technologies that get developed that allow for that to happen really ensures that you actually have new delivery models and new technologies that are then expandable globally. So right now, of course, we have gone outside of India. We have started off in Vietnam, Philippines, and a few other Southeast Asian geographies. And we are going to start off our initial sales post-FDA in the US as well. So we sort of feel that something which is simple to use has a global market. And therefore, the opportunity in India is to use the constraints as a way by which you come up with something that is truly disruptive. And we don't know how disruptive this is, but what we feel nice about is the fact that we were able to work with clinicians in solving a problem, the template of which may be used in terms of being able to do other things. And it's too early for us to really look at it as a public health impact. We really need to make this available in a much broader area before that can really be said. So I'll leave with sort of two things that I feel very strongly about, which is most innovations in the Indian context, I feel, especially if you want it to spread and have scale, have to focus on simplicity. So the smartphone in this case was not because it's cool, but because it's the most easy interface by which you can interact. You can zoom, you can take images very easily compared to traditional systems. And this simplification leads to impact when you scale, because something that's simple, you can actually spread it to 100 places much more easier than something that requires a lot of training. So I'm just leaving with that. Would be happy to engage in other conversations and any other questions that you may have. Okay. So what we did was we actually first had product designers come in. The product designers would first give the shape. So we would have the optical team, the electronics team, the software guys not come in at all. They would first give, from a usability point of view, how should this be. Thereafter, we would do the ZMAX, the whatever you would need to do from an optical ray tracing, as well as from an image point of view in terms of ensuring that you have minimum resolution and quality. But you have to do it within the design that's been frozen. So it was very interesting, because oftentimes it's the other way around. You first allow the entire design to come together, optics, electronics, etc. Then you cloak it as a design. Here we did it the other way around. We first had, and that has to do with the fact that the co-founder of the company is a product design engineer himself, is an industrial design person. So you are able to force that and then allow for the optics and the electronics to evolve around it. Yes, there were trade-offs. There are lots of trade-offs that you would need to go through from simplicity as well as from a reliability perspective. Those do get done in the normal course of things. But I think the most key aspect was this, which is first do the design and then get the technology. So that was really what we did here. Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. Okay. So that is the only way we can scale. See, and since you've touched on something which is the business part of the problem, I think it's important to talk. When you make something which is affordable, trust me, it's more difficult to sell. Okay? It is. There are quite a number of ophthalmologists who would say, nee yaar, can't be. If it is solo, kucho garbad hai. We had that even when we made HIV reagents also. We made it for 100 rupees, whereas the cost of an equivalent system imported in was 1500 bucks. Nee yaar, kuch to hai isme, gapla to hai. So it was very difficult, but I think initially we would get very psyched by it. But then we realized that you have to handle that perception. So that's where I think the design comes in again. Where what we do is we said whatever it is, it has to look, it has to radiate that quality. And earlier we would not focus too much on that. But now, even if the cost of development is very high, we make sure that the design exudes that kind of quality so that they look at it as a device that is actually extremely high cost. Point number one. Point number two, one of the things is we used to call ourselves, you can see the you can see the tagline that we have here. I'll make it a little bigger, which is, this is very important because we did this right now and it addresses the crux of it. We used to call ourselves Remedio Affordable Innovations. So we took out affordability right now. Because I think it's very important, because yes, we continue to make affordable, but if you say it's affordable or low cost or cheap, you are going to have that mindset that you've got to hit. Let's take Narrows in effect, correct. So it's about the value and it's about proving that it can do what the others can do, right? So one of the things we've decided is we are going to essentially be focused on making something simple and innovating. It so happens that they may be affordable, right? Because affordability is a very relative term. I may claim that we've reduced the price 10 times or 5 times, but still, to be very honest with you, a tier 3 ophthalmologist can still not afford that, right? He sees only around 5 patients or 6 patients a day. He may still not be able to afford that. So affordability, we realize, is highly relative, so we took that out. Second, because you have now reduced the cost, your development cost, and now I'm very clear that be it whether it is a MNC outside India or us, if anything, our development cost is higher because you have import duties on lenses, because we can't make all these lenses here. We get them made in Germany and Singapore and bring them in here. So you are actually setting yourself up for failure if you think that you're going to have 1,000 of these devices going out and you're going to make your revenues as a result of the placement of many of these devices. Instead, what we are going for is really the model which is not a capex intensive model, but a model where you can place it and actually have recurring revenues through screening, through tests. So basically what it would mean is you are able to come charge a patient. So one of the reasons for asking the question of how long it took is there is that opportunity cost that you should be willing to pay, because he talked about the time that it took for him. In my case, when I take my father, it's also my time along with his time and our opportunity cost along with his opportunity cost. So to a certain extent, we are doing the franchising models. Some of the ideas that we are looking at is we are trying to tie up with labs who do the diabetic profile. So they essentially in their collection centers itself are able to take images and give that as part of the report. The second is to actually partner with optical chains as well as small optical shops in tier 2, tier 3. See, because today we have around 17,000 ophthalmologists. You have 50 million diabetic cases. Just take diabetes for diabetic retinopathy. There's no way we are going to be producing we produce roughly 500 to 700 ophthalmologists a year. There's no way we are going to be able to bridge that gap. You have to go to what we call our non-specialist context. So that's optical shops, diagnostic labs. Third is through NGOs and public health centers. The fourth is through franchising models of services that are done at home. That is the only way by which we can create impact and make this model sustainable. So we are definitely doing that. Correct. So the traditional instruments need to make it contact. You have to place the lens on the eyeball curvature. So this is, we've moved to a non-contact imaging. So it doesn't touch the surface of the eye. So when it doesn't touch the surface of the eye, your trauma associated with its use is far reduced. Point number one. Point number two, there is a certain field of view and its physics, which is as you go closer to the eye, you get a much larger field of the retina. What we've been able to do is to achieve that field in a non-contact mode without having to touch the eye. That's really the innovation there. Coming to the part where the speculum, in terms of opening the eye there, yes, that remains because you need to access. But what we've seen is the trauma really comes in as a result of placing it, because you don't know how much weight you can place on the eye. So that's where you have a way by which it's non-contact. That's really what we're doing there. That's the difference. No, it's not. See, and I understand why as well. See, that same device is used by a specialist in the West who's well trained, and his or her job is as a neonatologist who's well trained to actually do that properly. So what they do there is they actually know how much weight they need to, and they go to the sides. Now, this is not to say that it's not possible in India. You can train for someone to get there, but it's more difficult. The non-contact one, to what we've seen, has not been attempted outside India. Okay. It is an optical design by which what we really realized is, there are business reasons for why someone has not done this. First, I'm going to make that very clear. Because when we looked at, and one of the questions we asked ourselves is, why wouldn't someone else think about this? We realized that during the time when there was film cameras, a certain optical design was done, by which time most of the lines were already, manufacturing lines were there. When the digital revolution came, nobody went back to change it because there is already sunk investments. So if you actually go, you can change much of it, but nobody gets in because there are too many challenges to get into. First, when you get a wide field of view, you're going to get very close to the eye. How do you make sure that your working distance is the same? It's not. So there, because we are product designers also, we have thought of ways by which you can fix the working distance without having to get very close to the eye. Just by using, for example, what we have, spectacles, right? We have different points where you can take registrations and you can do that. So that's one. The second, the physics of it, when you do a larger field, you need a wider angle. And you need more light, and you need more light to reflect off, because the reflectance is only around 6 or 7%. So you need that to be collected and imaged. So what we've really done there is to really make the aspheric optics, which is there in front, extremely high collection without compromising on the imaging and the illumination side, because what we've done is we have chosen the imaging and the illumination to be the same. So that way across multiple products, you have the same paths. So that gives you economies and efficiency of scale. For diabetic retinopathy screening, your imaging part and illumination is the same. It's the front end that we change. And secondly, there is a certain element of how you eliminate the reflection artifacts. That is really done by essentially a very different method from how the traditional Zeiss and Canon and that. That particular one, I can't get into detail because our patents are still not filed on that. But on the diabetic retinopathy one, I would be happy to get into details in terms of what it is. Fundamentally, it is about, I realized one thing, a mechanical engineer came up with a solution rather than optical engineer. So we were able to essentially do something in a trade-off where we could do something on the mechanical side that otherwise was done differently by the optical designs that were traditionally being done. So that's where the differentiation is, and I'd be happy to take you through the drawings and I can show you that as well. So it is about how do you eliminate those reflex artifacts, the artifacts that come, light that comes reflected from your cornea, from your other parts of the eye. Without that, you don't get the clear image quality. Yes, it's hardware. It's completely hardware. You can't do it on software, because if you do it on software, you compromise image quality. So polarizers and all that will affect. flash the system as in? No, I'm sorry. No, I have not got the instrument with me, but okay, just to give you a sense for it. So if you take so this roughly is around 15 to 20 kgs. This one is around 1.5 kgs. The size is about this much. It's something that's handheld and you can take it around. This is for diabetic retinopathy. The wide angle one, because of the optics, is actually much smaller. So this one is much smaller. If you look at here, this is something which is in your palm of your hand as opposed to that. See, what you really done, I mean, I don't want to really say it's not a lot of fundamental science innovation. I'm going to be very honest here. It is more about the interface of science and technology, and how do you marry it with what is a mobile phone, which is today can easily replace a laptop and do more. So the science, to some extent, I don't think we have changed. I mean, there's what's called the Gullstrand principle that remains the same for past 60 years. So the fundamental physics has not changed. How we implement the physics from a technology perspective is the only thing that we have changed.
Sure.
Thank you.